So this morning, we have a question. Is God a just God? The reason the thing that prompted this, in my thinking anyways, was this aspect. It was two of the fellows that we meet with on Monday nights. Two of the fellows were late, staying up late one Friday night playing video games. Not that I recommend that by any means, but they were doing that. But while they were doing it, one was a born-again Christian, and the other one says that he's an atheist, and yet he keeps coming. But he's had a lot of hurts in his life, and there was a suicide that took place. And so he says, I got a problem with God, you know. How is it that he can be just and have all those people, like you read in the Old Testament, have all those people killed? I mean, there's women and children, too. How can God be just? Now, for a lot of my life, I would say, if you asked me about that, I would say, well, I don't understand it all, but I know God's just. But I like to present more than just that answer this morning. But let's think about even the image that we have of Lady Justice. You've all seen that. And in our Western culture, we have this concept of justice because it comes from a biblical understanding. But what things do we see with Lady Justice? You can answer. What is characteristic of her? Okay, one is a blindfold, which represents?
Fairness.
Okay, all right, very good. You know, she's not a respecter of persons. Justice is not a respecter of persons. So if I refer to it as her, I'm personifying this. It's justice. So justice is not a respecter of persons. What else do we see? What's that? Scales. That's right. They're the balance, right? And so there should be equality. If whatever the offense is, it should be balanced with the penalty. We have some of those things even in our Constitution that it's forbidden to have excessive punishments, things like that. Okay, what else do we have? Blindfold, a balance, there's a couple more things. There's also, she's holding in the other, like this, a sword. Because there's power there. Justice means that it needs to be dealt with, whatever the situation. And in some pictures, there, she's standing on a snake, which is kind of interesting, okay, representing evil. Not all pictures of Lady Justice would have that. Now, her presentation is somewhat sensual and all because it's connected with the gods of the Greeks and the Romans and that type of thing. But nevertheless, there's these principles that come from this idea of what justice is, that justice. There's not favoritism. There's this balance. There's it's dealt with, and it's dealt with power. And you say, well, is God a just God? And the answer is, well, yes, always. Even if we don't understand because of our limited perspective. And so if you're there in Exodus chapter 33, did I tell you there? Go there, I think. So, okay. Exodus chapter 33, we've been in this passage before where Moses is seeking a fresh vision of the Lord. He says, God, I don't want to go forward unless you're going to go with me. I need your presence. And he says, okay, I will show you my glory. And this is what he says in verse 18 of chapter 33. And then in verse 19, he said, and I will make all my goodness pass before thee. And I will proclaim the name of the Lord before thee and will be gracious to whom I will be gracious and will show mercy on whom I will show mercy. And he said, thou canst not see my face, for there shall no man see me and live. And the Lord said, behold, there is a place by me, and thou shalt stand upon a rock, and it shall come to pass, while my glory passeth by, that I will put thee in a cleft of the rock and will cover thee with my hand while I pass by. And I will take away mine hand, and thou shalt see my back parts, but my face shalt not be seen. So here God is showing mercy even to Moses, and Moses is a good guy. I mean, he's exemplary. And yet, even Moses would die if he saw the full expression of God's glory. I don't know what that is. I've never seen it. But I can't even imagine the magnificence of it. But he says there's this crack in the rocks here. I'm going to fit you in here, put my hand over you. I'm going to pass by. As God passes by, he's going to proclaim who he is. And just stating that, there's this glory, this magnificence, the brightness. And then he's going to take the hand off and he's going to let him see the afterglow. And so we see, starting verse 5, this happened the next day. In verse 5, it says of chapter 34, this is chapter 34, verse 5, and the Lord descended in a cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the name of the Lord. And the Lord passed by before him and proclaimed, the Lord God, merciful, gracious, long-suffering, and abundant in goodness and truth, keeping mercy for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin, and that will by no means clear the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children and upon the children's children unto the third and the fourth generation. And Moses made haste and bowed his head toward the earth and worshiped. Now, as God declares who he is, the first things that he mentions here is all the good things that we like. Gracious, merciful, long-suffering, abundant in goodness and truth, having mercy, forgiving iniquity. Oh, that just sounds great. But then he has this statement, and will by no means clear the guilty. And so we've talked about this, I don't know, last year or something like that. And so I just want to not go too far in it, but you can't have mercy and long-suffering and gentleness like this without the justice part. Having justice allows for mercy. So if, God says he wants to forgive, that he is forgiving, that he is long-suffering, he's gentle and all these things. But at the same time, he can't let one single thing go. I get asked sometimes by people that have an opportunity to share Bible things, things about God, and they're troubled at times, and they says, so is there justice? One guy in particular has gone through a divorce and it's been really, really nasty, and his ex-wife has blackened his name and gotten him arrested numerous times, made up stuff, and tried to turn his kids against him. It's heartbreaking for him, and he wants to know, is there justice? Because he doesn't see it. And I said to him, yeah, Travis, whether in this life or in the next, there's always justice. And he was encouraged by that. The problem is, encouraged when we see justice for somebody else, but the same is true of us as individuals. I mean, it's like there's the blindfold, no respecter of persons aspect. It's like it doesn't matter. Like this particular ex-wife can be nasty, nasty, but unless you're perfect without sin, every one of my failures are also going to be held accountable. So I might be rejoicing about this situation, but I'm left here in trouble. Personally, God does not let one offense go unpunished. And yet, mercy is extended. Even if you know about the tabernacle and eventually the temple, they had this piece of furniture in there called the mercy seat. It was the Ark of the Covenant with this a golden seat on top of it, and it was called the mercy seat. And once a year at the Day of Atonement, they would take the blood from the bull and they would sprinkle it upon that seat. And it was all lots of symbolism. But inside that ark, and ark is just a fancy word for box, inside that box were the Ten Commandments. And so mercy was possible because of shed blood, but the basis of the mercy was the law. It was the justice of God. God, a just God, requires every single offense to have its payment. Which is very sobering. So as I said, it may appear that in this life, a person gets away with something, but it's hard to believe that even in this life, they get away with it. Because we may not see it. They may not be in jail, but they have to deal with stuff internally. There's guilt. And there's shame. There's stuff that eats them up. When they're all by themselves, laying in their bed at night, there's stuff that's going on inside of them. God is, you know, pursuing them. So if we could turn, please, to Revelation chapter 20, and I'm just going to point out a couple of things from that passage. I love the book of Revelation. Here's this final judgment. This is after the millennial kingdom. And after Satan has been loosed and there's this judgment upon him and he's cast into the lake of fire, we see that the final judgment, which is called the Great White Throne, and it's this great white throne appears, and then and the heavens start rolling back and earth is moved back, and it says the earth and heaven fled away and there was found no place for them. And all you see here is this throne and then all these people, lots and lots of people. In verse 12, it says, "And I saw the dead, small and great." In other words, whether you are important or whether you weren't important, "stand before God. And the books were opened, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged out of those things which were written in the books according to their works. And the sea gave up the dead which were in it, and death and hell delivered up the dead which were in them, and they judged every man according to their works. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire." This is the second death. Let's stop there for a second. So this is that last and final judgment, and I, in my mind, I see all these people lined up, and I can't imagine how far the line goes. But it's everybody since the beginning of God creating man. So at least 6,000 years worth of human beings living and dying and all this stuff. They're all lined up. Except for those whose name is in the book of life. And all these people, and God is a just God. He's having the books open. Open the books. They open the books. The name, and they're standing there. And all the things are being read. This is what he did. This is what he didn't do. This is what he did. This is what he did. This is what he didn't do. And all those things are listed. It says, check in the Lamb's book of life. Check in the in the book of life. Is their name written out? No, it's not. And they have no hope in it. And the angels take them and cast them into the lake of fire. And God presents his just cause before them. And every one of those offenses, every one of those nasty things, the stolen Tootsie Roll, the lie to your mom, you know, the rolling of eyes to you, you know, when your parents didn't see it. Every single offense is listed there. The murders, the embezzlements, all of it. And I believe, I'm not making a case for it today, but I believe that there's levels of torment in the lake of fire from things that Jesus had said in the Gospels. But there is no hope for them. There's no longer any hope. He says this is the second death. So the first death is a physical death. The second death is the separation from God for all of eternity. And so there is justice. It does come. And so the hope is that while you breathe, you could get your name written in the Lamb's Book of Life, which is a wonderful thing. So God is just and he rightly judges every offense, but again, it doesn't always appear to be so. And as the question that I mentioned to you earlier on, if God is good and just, why does he command all those people in the Old Testament, especially women and children, to be killed? Well, let me answer it this way. God brought the Israelites out of Egypt, and he gave them a land that was already occupied and commanded that all the inhabitants there of the land, right? The land of what? What do we call that? The land of Canaan? Today, it's sometimes referred to Palestine, but the land of Israel, and it's way bigger than what Israel occupies today, that he gave them. And all these inhabitants were to be killed. Now, you'd have to say, well, why? Were the Jews inherently a better people than those Amorites, Hittites, Jebusites, all the otherites that are listed, you know, as it's listed there? And the answer is no. In fact, the same standard that the occupants of that land, the same standard that they were judged by and then commanded that they be killed and to be cast out of the land, is the same standard God chose, that God judged his people that he brought into the land. And we're going to see this in a moment. So look with me in Genesis chapter 15. Genesis chapter 15, we'll make this as quick as possible. Starting with verse 13, he says, and he said unto Abram, this is Abraham, know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in the land that is not theirs, this is talking about Egypt, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them 400 years. Now we find another verse in Exodus chapter 12 that actually says specifically that it was 430 years that they were there. To the day. So he says, they're going to be there. And verse 14, and also that nation whom they shall serve will I judge, and afterwards shall they come out with great substance, and thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace, and shall be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation, they shall come hither again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not full. That's a very important point. So God says, I'm going to give you this land, this property. It's going to be to you, Abraham. I'm giving this gift of the land. He reestablishes that promise with Isaac, then with Jacob, and with Jacob's sons, and the children of Israel. Now, Jacob was got a name changed to Israel, so that's the children of Israel. That's why they're called that. And he says, and to you and to your descendants, I give this land. From River Euphrates all the way down into partway into the peninsula of the Arabian Peninsula to the Nile River along the Mediterranean coast there. This whole property, this is yours. Like I said, it's a very small part that they occupy today. And it's because of disobedience. But he says to them, this is yours, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to send your descendants down into Egypt, and then I'm going to bring them out. But the reason I'm not giving it to them now is the iniquity, and iniquity is the self-willed sins. The iniquity of the Amorites is not full. In other words, there was a boundary that God says, when they pass that boundary, I'm going to bring judgment. But he says the same things to the Jews. If you do the same things, I will do the same thing to you. So God is just. This is the point. If he has somebody killed, There's a just reason for it. It's not just, well, I don't like these guys. I like the Jews better. I'm going to bless them. In fact, he makes it very clear in Deuteronomy. He says, I didn't choose you because you guys were wonderful. And he tells them many times, you are stubborn people. So let's look at a couple more verses where he says this very clearly. Deuteronomy chapter 12. Deuteronomy chapter 12. Verse 29. He says, when the Lord thy God shall cut off the nations from before thee, whither thou goest to possess them, and thou succeedest them, now you're going to take their place, and dwellest in their land, take heed to thyself that thou be not snared by following them after that they be destroyed from before thee, and that thou inquire not after their gods, saying, how did these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. Thou shalt not do so unto the Lord thy God, for every abomination to the Lord which he hateth have they done unto their gods, for even their sons and their daughters they have burnt in the fire to their gods. The thing whatsoever I command you, observe to do it. Thou shalt not add thereunto nor diminish from it. So he says, do not do this. Everything that they did, they were doing it in worship to their gods, which is actually worship to demonic spirits. And Paul makes that clear in the New Testament, that when you're worshiping idols and false gods, you're actually worshiping demonic spirits. But they did all this corruption. So we see a list of it. And I, instead of turning there, I'm going to tell you and what is that there. He lists incest, voyeurism, bestiality, homosexuality, and child sacrifice. Those things specifically are listed in Leviticus chapter 18. But he especially highlights the aspect of that, what we mentioned here already, that even to the point of offering their children. And then if you would go with me, and I'm leaving out some things here this morning, that Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 19 and 20, he says, and it shall be, if thou do it all, forget the Lord thy God, and walk after their other gods, and serve them, and worship them, I testify against you this day, that ye shall surely perish, and as the nations which the Lord destroyed before your face, so shall ye perish, because ye would not be obedient unto the voice of the Lord your God. And a couple of the two passages in Leviticus that I'm not reading this morning actually talks about the land spewing them out. Today we have a flower that's called a wandering Jew. That's because the Jewish people are wandering because of their disobedience. God is just, and it doesn't matter whether you're Jew or Gentile. God is just for all people. And he said to them, I will scatter you to the ends of the earth if you do not walk with me. If you ignore me and you commit all these sins, I'll scatter you. And then he also promises that I will regather you in the end of days. And we're seeing that happen. We're living in the day when the Jews are being regathered. And eventually, they will come to recognize that Jesus was the Messiah. They crucified him. They slew him. And they will turn to him. And then Jesus will show up in the eastern sky with all of us. And I know I'm not filling in a lot of blanks here, but it is a glorious thing. But it will be right at that point when the nation, they've been beat down. 2/3 of Israel has been destroyed. The armies are there to destroy the last part. And they finally recognize as a nation, there are Jews coming to know Jesus every day. It is fantastic when they come to know that Jesus actually is the Messiah. But right when they're about to be totally annihilated, which people have been trying to do for a long time, they recognize this one that we were looking to for a rescuer, a deliverer, he is destroying us. We have crucified our Messiah. It was Yeshua. And that's when Jesus shows up to deliver him. In scattering, and one of the times of scattering the Israelites, he used the nation of Babylon to attack Israel. And it came in three waves. And the first wave, we see, if you read the book of Daniel, Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're taken into Babylon. And then there's another wave, and then there's a third wave, and finally crushes Israel. The temple is demolished. All the things, the silver and the gold and the vessels and all that stuff was all brought to Babylon. And God's focus on showing himself to the nation of Babylon, where his people are. And in the book of Habakkuk, he tells Habakkuk, these things are going to come to pass. So they haven't come to pass yet. But he's telling, when it does come to pass, people will shudder. I mean, there'll be just like, you can't imagine this all happening. Because one of the common sayings was, we're okay because we have the temple. God will not destroy that. Look at the temple. It gleams in the gold of it. It glistens in the morning light. And he says, we have the temple. He's not going to destroy that. God is not interested in stuff. He's interested in the heart of man. And in Habakkuk, he tells Habakkuk that I'm going to use the Babylonians to bring this judgment upon my people. And Habakkuk is incredulous about this. He's like, those guys worship, you know, false gods. Why would you do this? But he says, I'm going to use Babylon, and then he's going to cross a line. And when he crosses that line, I'm going to bring judgment upon him. The point being of me saying this is, God is just. And even though his people were disobedient, he used another people to bring judgment upon him. But it's not like they were better. You know, the Babylonians weren't better. And when they gave credit to the gods of silver and gold, the Babylonian Empire fell that night. God is no respecter of persons. He is just for every single person. And I would like to say, in conclusion, we struggle to understand in each and every circumstance of life how God is always just and always good. But we are limited. We are limited by time, perspective, and wisdom. If we see life the way God sees things, and we were infinitely good, I mean, if you could look at the past, the present, and the future, see all this all together, be infinitely good and infinitely wise, if you could, you would choose the same thing that God does. Now, there's many a times that I've said, God, I don't get it. I do not get it. I do not understand why you're doing this. But I only got this little bit of perspective. That's why I'm struggling. And I have to go back to who he has revealed himself to be. Otherwise, I'm miserable or bitter at worst. But we would choose the same thing if we had that wisdom. God is no respecter of persons. He does not play favorites. If you mock him, watch out. There's a fellow by the name of Conor McGregor that is a famous fellow from Europe, and is he Irish? What is he? Irish. And he was undefeated. And somebody asked him, well, if you were to fight Jesus Christ, how would you do? And he was kind of vile the way his answer was, but he basically said, I'd beat him too. The next bout he lost. He was very humbled. What about the Titanic? Not even God could sink it. There was a lady comedian. I don't know her name. I've never paid any attention to her. But I just saw a little clip where she is mocking God. And right there on the stage, as she's mocking God, all of a sudden she goes, and she falls over. And you can hear her head hit the stage. And somebody put an accumulation of several of these things where people are just making fun of God and mocking him. And then there was something that happened in their lives that say, like, you can't do that. But as a just and holy God, he requires justice to always prevail, whether in this life or in the next. So at great personal expense, Jesus made a way to escape from the penalty of our sin. Personal expense. So man is left with a choice. We can either take the substitutionary payment that was made upon the cross there in Jerusalem, or face the wrath of God all alone. For those of us that have been bought back, are redeemed, are saved, born again, not the different terms to refer to what this is, we are completely forgiven. And the righteousness of Jesus is put to our account, and our names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. So I would not want to create any fear unnecessarily here. If you've put your trust in Jesus, you're in. He's your protector. He's your redeemer. He says, I will never leave you or forsake you. But justice had to prevail nevertheless, and it did. Jesus took all the brunt of what you and I deserved. God is always just in whatever he does. And so we have a message to tell to the nations. I love the songs that we sang this morning. I really did. I love the haven of rest. And I've decided that I'm not going to sail the wild seas anymore. I've come to the haven. If you don't know Jesus, today's the day of salvation. That's what God always says. Today's the day. If you're stirred and you don't know Jesus, today's the day. But if you do know Jesus, then today's the day to tell somebody else about it. You know, I've got hope. In fact, this week, I had a lady stop in just a couple days ago, and she was asking me about some wood she needs to build a lean-to. We got talking, and after we were all done, she says, can I ask you a question, like, about your life besides just cutting wood? And I went, sure. Didn't know what she was going to ask. And she says, my son is in college to be an electrician, but he's very fearful that he's going to be drafted and going to go to one of the wars in the Middle East. I said, well, first of all, there's no draft. They'd have to pass a law. And we had some discussion about all of that. I said, you know, there's a lot of fearful things, this crazy world that we live in. And I tell you, I would be very fearful if, but I'll tell you what anchors my life. It's Jesus. And so I was able to share with her the gospel and gave her a track to explain to it. And I texted her later in the evening, sent her a website with for metal roofing. And I just said, I really would like to know your opinion about that tract after you've got a chance to read it. She said, well, I was just about to sit down and read it. So at that point, we were sitting at the table. We stopped and prayed for her. So, you know, God's in pursuit of people. And she's got a decision that's coming to the forefront. And you've got people that you're interacting with. And maybe it's just a little word. Maybe it's a kindness that you do. But the God of heaven is not going to let any one of those offenses go. They either have to be paid by Jesus or they pay it all by themselves. And that will take eternity. And that is very sobering. Very sobering. But the gospel is powerful, and people are looking for that answer. So be encouraged. One person may give you a hard time, but there is somebody that's looking for that answer. Don't think that nobody is looking, because there are people ready to hear that truth. Just got to look and see where God's at work. Right? And so this week, ask God for an opportunity. God, would you just give me an opportunity just to say a few words? If you open it up more, I'll say more if you give me the boldness. But looking for that. It's not about inviting them to church. But it's not. It's not about getting them into a building. It's getting them to know Jesus. And once they know Jesus, guess what they'll want to do? They'll want to come fellowship with the rest of us. Amen? Father, thank you for our time together. We thank you that we can wholeheartedly embrace the fact that you are just and that you are merciful. And God, we thank you so very much for your mercy. We thank you that your mercies are new every morning. We thank you that you are in pursuit of us. God, your name should be praised to the highest of heavens for the fact that you are in pursuit of us. Every single person upon the face of this earth, you love and desire for them to know you. And we recognize what the scriptures say, Lord, that there is none that seek after God, no, not one. And so, God, we praise you because all of us that have sought you was because you sought us first. You stirred our hearts. We recognize the need. God, give us that boldness, that compassion for that you have for the lost, that we might be your body and be your mouthpiece in this generation to share the blessedness of Jesus. To have them come, not just be saved, but become disciples, followers of you. And we pray this for your honor and glory. Amen.